Welcome to the episode 318 of the Extra Features Podcast. It's a movie review podcast where we review movies, and just as a warning, we do spoil. So if you're interested in hearing what we think about a movie, you might want to skip ahead a few minutes if you haven't seen it yet, and then come back and listen to us again for our brilliant insight. I am Doug, and actually we have a returning luminary in the Extra Features history. It is none other than Kevin Boyd. Welcome back, Kevin.
Thank you. I do spoil in the sun. So if you leave me out for too long, I go bad. But no, generally, it's great to be back. I've been running around all over this planet doing stuff, doing cons. And so I'm happy to come back and talk comics and movies with you guys. Comic book movies in particular. But
two big ones, or one big one and one kind of bomb, but we'll discuss that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're so and Kevin, always welcome with us. Back, by the way. I'm Simon, and yes. I miss there Kevin. Because Kevin had to put up with me for like early days when we had no idea what we were doing. None.
Well, I hadn't heard from you in a while. I'm like, does Simon hate me now? Am I like, is he cursing?
No, I'm
him?
Just busy. I haven't told you because I haven't spoken to you, but I now have three jobs. I have another job as another usher at another place. So I have two usher jobs. And you've been away, I've been going to the gym 5 to 6 days a week. So I don't really have a lot of free time. And every time I go to think of texting you, I open up Kevin's Facebook. Oh, I'm going on a plane to Italy. You know what? He doesn't need to hear from me. He really does not hear. Hey, Kev, how's it going? I'll just leave him. I'll talk to him when he's got some time.
Yeah, I'm like, it's just nonstop. I'm off to Denver later this week. And then thankfully, I get a few weeks at home, but I've got three shows to plan. So I'll be working nonstop. So, and but anyway, it's been an interesting movie. I have managed to get a few movies in on planes and stuff like that.
How is watching a movie on a plane? Like, I know you sometimes you have 4 hours, sometimes you have an hour and a half. So what do you decide to watch? I mean, you're like, shit, I don't have to watch new releases because you really don't have to be on the show until you add time.
Right. So I still like to watch new releases, but I look for something that fits the time frame and something I'd like to see. Like the last movie I saw on a plane was Batman, the Doom that came to Gotham, the animated movie.
I saw it.
Yeah. And you know what? It was a fine experience on the plane. I bring my own headphones and, just wedge myself against the wall of the plane and watch a movie.
Are you at the window seat then or at the back?
I usually try to get one of those premium seats. They're like not premium economy, but they're like the slightly larger seats, not the exit row stuff, but that's sort of like the middle of the plane.
Okay.
And I mean, if an upgrade is reasonable price, I'll do that. But most of the time it's not these days. So.
And Doug, are you preparing for your summer travels?
Not really traveling this summer, but so I have nothing to prepare for. Planning on doing stuff around the house, to be honest.
Like that barbecue I've never been invited to? Is that going to be happening sometime soon?
Probably, but mostly I got like a dresser where drawers won't close. So I got to go through and find old clothes that I don't wear anymore to donate, stuff like that.
Oh, see, you I just had fun the stuff. Problem. I have to go fix the dresser so the clothes will fit. Okay, I think we're done. Do I have one thing? Don't forget, people, Extra Features at Gmail for PayPal. Pay $5 and we'll review a movie for you, whatever you want. You forgot that, but that's okay.
Yes.
Do you want to start?
Do you want to go into the first? Okay, we got news. Actually, some breaking news today. Unfortunately, it's not good news. Many of you may remember that actor Julian Sands went missing on a hike in California earlier this year. Yeah. They found human remains today, and they expect identification and later this week. So unfortunately, it looks like actor Julian Sands has passed away and it has been confirmed.
So are we going to do Warlock on a future episode?
We could do the whole trilogy. Why not?
Is there three Warlocks?
I think so.
I think I've only seen one, but it's just okay. I'll get to them at some point in my life.
Okay. But yeah, I was always happy to see him show up in things, from straight dramas like A Room with a View to the crazy fun horror films like the Warlock series. I thought he was a really good actor, and I'm sad to see him go.
Me too. Okay, what's our first film, Doug? And I just, so everybody knows, I apologize for our last episode when I may or not have missed a couple of movies, but I've rectified that now.
Okay. Well, our first film is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. This is going to be a long list, so bear with me. Directed by Joaquin Dos Santos, Kemp Powers, and Justin K. Thompson, starring Shamir, Haley Steinfeld, Brian Tyree Henry, Luna Lauren Velez, Jake Johnson, Jason Schwartzman, Issa Rae, Daniel Kaluuya, and Oscar Isaac. So who wants to give their Spider-Verse opinions first?
Well, we got to let our honored guest, even though he's a founding member, he hasn't been here so long, first, I think, because I'm sure he hasn't seen every movie.
No, I don't know if I've seen every movie on your list this week, but I've seen at least three of the big ones. So what can I say about Across the Spider-Verse other than this is a work of art? This is, someone was like, aren't you worried? Like, I read the synopsis of the film and I'm like, I don't know if I care about the synopsis of the film. I'm just going in for the experience and it delivers. I mean, this movie is every world that they visit has its own look, texture, feel. The characters are great. They're fleshed out even further. Spider-Gwen. We get to learn a lot more about, Spider-Man 2099 and what his motivations are in this case. You know, there's a reason, for some reason, that Miles Morales has been not asked to join this secret spider society that's formed to protect the multiverse from incursions. That's very similar to some of the things we've been seeing in the other Marvel live-action movies. But villains from other universes have been mysteriously showing up in some of the Spider-Man universes. Like, in this case, it starts off with a vulture from, like a Michelangelo-like world showing up in the world of Spider-Gwen. And so she has to take him down with the help of, Spider-Man 2099 and, a new Spider-Woman that we've never seen before, Jessica Drew in this case. And then, I think it's the two of them, but yeah, it's just kind of cool. Like, the, we learn more about Miguel. There's a lot of the animation, I think, of the figures in particular is outstanding in this movie. Everything is articulated. You get there's no sense of, even though it's cartoony, that's everything has its own sort of realistic type of cartoon look to it. Like I don't know. It's hard. I don't know if that came across well or enough as it is, but it's like there are shots of Gwen's father when she's talking to him. And they look like a Darwin Cook illustration come to life. And I'm just, I was just overwhelmed by the look and the feel and the depth of this. You know, there are a million Spider-Man and there's that game of which Spider-Man is this? And do I know this character? And do I know this version or that version? Or, you know, I like, oh, there's Ben Reilly being angsty like every other 90s character, you know, things like that. Very little Spider-Ham in this one. And Spider-Man Noir, they're kind of saved up for a peak moment. But, I love it. Like, this is probably the best comic book movie made since the last one, which was probably the best comic book movie ever made. So the fact that they're continuing with this is, and just the quality. There's been some controversy in the last week about some of the people working on the film think there's no way they're going to get the third installment done in time for next March. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. And some things have been sort of levied against Amy Pascal, the Spider-Man producer for Sony, that she didn't have a lot of respect for animation or the animators, made them work extra long hours and stuff. But, I mean, in this case, it's whatever the case, I mean, this is outstanding. I mean, what they've produced is just unlike anything else on the market. And it's just leading the way. It makes other superhero movies look pedestrian.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. So I'd say like 10 out of 10.
Uh-huh.
If I were rating. Yeah.
Simon, do you want me to give my opinion? Or?
Yeah, you want me to go last? That's fine. That'll go with me.
Okay. I will start off by saying Into the Spider-Verse, I think, is the greatest superhero movie made. So this had a lot to live up to. Unfortunately, I think it falls a little short for me. I don't think it's quite as good as that initial movie. I do have my reasons, mostly because I think it's a little too sprawling. I think it could have been condensed a bit. I felt like every scene with Miles' parents, it felt like it was a lecture. I loved the parents in the first movie. This time it felt like every time we saw them, it was a minutes-long lecture scene. I did absolutely – I mean, I loved the movie. This is definitely – it's a 4 out of 5 for me. It's that's my Letterboxd score, 4 out of 5. But I do think it falls short of the first film. However, saying that, it's so gorgeous to look at. The animation, it's beyond compare. I mean, Hobie, Spider-Punk coming in, the way his cells change, or his animation style changes, like every few cells of screen time, it's amazing to look at. Mm-hmm. And I love that Hailee Steinfeld got to flesh out Spider-Gwen in this movie. We really got more in depth with her. My one main drawback was no Spider-Ham. There was no character like Spider-Ham in this movie. Everybody was humanoid. Everybody had the same spider powers. There was nothing different enough about any of the characters. Having said that, I love a lot of the cameos in here. My kids were freaking out when Spectacular Spider-Man from the cartoon came on screen. They were like, yes, that's the best Spider-Man ever. Mm-hmm. And I loved seeing Donald Glover. I thought that was hysterical. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with this movie. I just don't think it was as good as the first.
Okay, you guys hit on a lot of great points. I'm going to give you guys a thing, but you guys did not mention Spidey 2099. Lost my crap. That's when I dropped him. Huge Spidey 2099 fan, made my day. I gotta agree with Kevin. I like the way the animation kept changing. So when somebody new would get introduced to a thing, and I don't know what you guys are going on. The end scene of this film was amazing. When all the Spideys are chasing after him, like, this is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It just things. And I like how it builds on everything. I really felt they gave each character enough time for me to know who they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I did like that because I thought that might be a problem with all the 18,000 Spider-Mans, but I geeked out constantly knowing who they all were. And Kevin, being a huge Spider-Man fan, must have felt very similar to me, going, yes, oh, I know who that is. I know who that is. It was great. I thought the voice acting was good. Unlike another film I watched, I knew this was a part one. So I knew, no, did I? Well, I wasn't like, this is because partway through, I'm like, wow, this is getting close to the end. I feel it. I don't feel we're wrapping this up. Oh, wait, this is part one. Okay. Because you know me, Doug. I really don't pay any attention to titles or anything like that. It just kind of threw me off. I love the stuff with his parents, but I do agree it was like a lecture. I have to agree that 100%. But I was so into this film. And the only problem I have, you guys saying this is the best superhero, I'm sorry, Batman The Dark Knight Returns is the best film ever. Superhero one. The Nolan film?
The Dark Knight? Oh, what? You mean The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight,
you mean,
yes.
The Dark Knight.
Yes. That's right, that one. It's the best one. I'll put this number 2, no problem. And I'll put Avengers Endgame as 3.
You could say that this is the best animated.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. I will give it the best anime. But no, I like the voice acting. I thought the story was good. I enjoyed it. I do find it I could argue it could drag a bit, but just being a geek, it worked for me. But if you're not a geek, I could see a little bit of dragging here at some points. But I loved it. I think my favorite line, you know, there's only about six or seven of us. It's a very small community. And he gets there, there's like 4,000 Spider-Mans. I was dying.
So I would say I had fun with this one because Fan Expo sponsored a screening of this.
Yes, and you got to see it early.
I got to see it early, but I got to invite as many Toronto comic book artists as possible to come to this.
Oh, wow.
So I had about 80 that's come to this show and see it with them. And just the excitement and the level of inspiration coming out of it was just amazing. Like, everybody was on a high coming out of it. They're like, just, they couldn't wait to go home and start producing comics again. Because this is really a love letter to comic books, I think. So, there were a few non-human characters, but they were like the Spider T-Rex and the... Mm-hmm. But yeah, they were nothing like Spider-Ham. But I think they're saving him for part three.
I hope so. I hope they bring him back.
And Spider-Pig.
Well, Gwen assembled the web at the end, right? Mm-hmm. So she assembled her own team, and then they go out to rescue Miles. And I think that's the third movie.
Can we get Spider-Pig from Simpsons to show up? Because that's whatever Spider-Pig can.
Spider-Pig, yeah.
Well, I think they missed an opportunity to have a Spider-Man with a neck brace on from Turn Off the Dark.
Yes. Which I have never seen. So
I like the little nods to the live action stuff, which was great to see. You saw something from Toby, something from Andrew. You got to see Donald Glover as the Prowler, and assuming that's the MCU that we're seeing him from. But no, lots of great stuff, and I love how it kind of ties in with all of the Far From Home theme. They actually mentioned that punk Spider-Man and Doctor Strange messing things up. Just lots of little nods. You know, this is where Sony's doing Spider-Man right. I don't know if you guys saw the trailer for Kraven the Hunter. I know Simon
know it was out. Yeah. I haven't seen Madame
Web. I saw it and decided not to comment on it because, you know.
Really?
If you don't have anything nice to say, why say anything? Exactly. So
it's not worth commenting about. It's just,
yes.
Wow. You guys tell me I'm seeing a train wreck coming up.
Yes. Well, it's like other Sony Spider-Verse stuff, like Morbius and the Venom movie. So
he gets powers by being bitten by a lion. It's ridiculous.
Gives him affinity with animals.
Kidding me. That was a joke?
No.
It was it ought to see that Russell Crowe was his father.
Yes.
I didn't realize he was even in it. So,
did they do a wide shot to get Russell Crowe in the camera angle?
he certainly fills the screen.
What happened, Russell? Put down the bananas.
He's been eating too much lion meat.
Pretty much. Well, we will have a full review of Kraven the Hunter when it pops up, I guess.
In October?
Oh, October? So
maybe.
That's when it's supposed to come out, but you never know, right?
Well, it'll get here. It'll feel like a flash. That was a bad transition, I know.
It was terrible.
Yes. Well, our next film then is The Flash, directed by Andy Muschietti, starring Ezra Miller, Sasha Calle, Michael Keaton, and Michael Shannon, along with some other people in there as well, but those are the big ones.
I will start. This is a big mess. An absolute friggin' mess. I like parts of this film, and it usually involves the word Batman in it. If Batman is in it, I'm on board with this film. If it's just a Flash talking to himself, I'm not on board with this film. I wanted to punch Ezra Miller in the face about 40 times in this film. I'm like, can you shut up? You're not interesting to me. And this whole thing of hanging out with yourself just annoyed me even more. Like, that first 20 minutes I thought were great. I'm like, oh, is this movie? I'm on board with Alfred and Ben Affleck. I'm like, I'm in. This is great. And then he decides to go back and save his parents. I think that's how we start this whole nonsense. if I remember correctly. And I'm just like, I don't care. This is not Flashpoint. This is not what I remember ever reading. Didn't enjoy it in any way. He just drives me nuts. I don't like this guy. I think he needs to go talk about Kevin. He never got that far, so he needs to go talk about himself. I don't know. Everybody was raving about this. I was so excited, including the guy on this show, on his Facebook post, but he'll talk later. I just think this film needs some work in the middle. I think the transition scenes did not work for me ever. I had a lot of problems. I mean, I thought the end was, and Supergirl, I thought was a mess. Absolutely thought she was terrible. Didn't like her costume. I didn't like her. And I mean, I didn't mind the end against, I guess I can ruin it. We ruined everything. Zod, I thought was okay. But I gotta say, I enjoyed that fight scene better than I enjoyed the one in Superman Returns. Isn't that the one when he comes back? Did I have the wrong movie, Kevin? Whatever that Zack Snyder one was, Zod.
That was
Man of Steel.
Yeah. So that's my problem. I think it's just a mess at times, and at other times it's fantastic. So I think we just have to clean up that Flash scenes, or maybe have a different premise of why he needs to go back. Hmm. And that's my major problem. I love the little joke at the end, which I'm not going to ruin, but I thought it was fantastic.
Okay. I will say I am pretty much on board with Simon on this. I would give this one a 2 out of 5, and both of my points go to Michael Keaton, because I love seeing Michael Keaton again. I thought he was very charismatic when he gives his whole spiel about the multiverse and the pasta cooking. I loved his performance there. I loved the action scene in the Russian prison when he swoops down and takes out all the guards. I loved the gyroscopic batwing in the fight with Zod's army. I thought all the Michael Keaton stuff was really cool. The problem is Ezra Miller. First, the dude does not physically know how to run. And I apologize. I shouldn't call him dude. He's non-binary, or they are non-binary. I apologize. But they don't know how to run. I have never seen anybody run by pointing with two fingers and whatever he was doing with his arms flailing about. No human runs that way. I absolutely despised younger Barry in this movie with his awful, awful laugh. I every time he did his hyena type giggle, I wanted to claw my ears out. And then at the end, when the worlds are combining, or he's seeing the different Earths, I thought a lot of those characters, I'm trying not to spoil here, a lot of those characters looked incredibly CGI'd. I thought it was kind of a slap in the face to some of the people who are no longer with us. That they were used in that way. I certainly hope they got the family's permission to do that. They did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Chris's mother agreed too.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I will say I did see this in Kevin Smith's movie theater. Kevin Smith owns a movie theater in Highland Park, New Jersey. And I will spoil this. The scene, I saw it with Kevin. He hosted a, you know, watch the movie with Kev. Mm-hmm. The scene with the Nicolas Cage Superman fighting a giant spider, Kevin Smith, you know, he was the loudest cheer in the auditorium. He let out a big, big yell for that. So that was kind of cool to see, but I thought Nicolas Cage looked so CGI in this. And whoever thought it was a good idea to have Ezra Miller put a baby in a microwave, they should be fired.
I just want to back this up. Did Kevin Smith, I had a chat about this movie afterwards.
Yes. Yeah, he did.
Did he love it?
And I will say, I left it
so good and this and that. And he loved the CGI, which was terrible.
He did. He liked it. He he liked it for personal reasons. Like, you know, he said he loved seeing Michael Keaton back. He said this was Batman 2.5 for him, for having Michael Keaton back. He loved the references to Tim Burton's Batman, seeing like the armory room. It's the same room as in the first Batman. He loved seeing the Nicolas Cage scene. He thought that was a shout out to him, but also a shout out to Burton and Cage and John Peters, the producer who wanted the giant spider scene. But yeah, he loved it. But he said he also recognizes why some people can bump against it, why they don't like it.
Perfect. So he's getting a little better. He's not just blowjobbing as usual.
Pretty much.
Okay.
All right. So I kind of disagree with you both.
We knew that was coming. Okay.
And as you know, probably saw my review on my wall.
Oh, I did. I definitely did.
So I went to a fan event screening of this film, which they claimed was not the final version. And I can tell you, it's pretty much the final version that I saw. The only difference is that you don't see who Bruce Wayne is at the very end.
Oh, okay.
Barry goes, who the F are you? And that's it. It ends. No credits. No little thing with Aquaman at the end. Nothing like that. So it's just basically it ends. And they say, thanks, leave. And so we all got up and left. But I love the opening. I agree with you. He can't run. He's terrible as a runner. He looks like a clown trying to run. And he's speeding, but he's running slowly. It just doesn't look right. Something's not going on. But I thought the costume looked right.
Okay.
And that was a big problem with Justice League. He looked like a hood ornament. And I thought, here, they finally got... I was worried when I saw all the stuff with the glowing yellow lines and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, God, I hope it's not like that all the time. But it's not. It's the Red Flash costume. It's when he runs that those yellow lines break. And what they are, it controls the friction and the energy. So that, like, when blue lightning surrounds him, it means that it's building up a charge and it has to be dissipated somehow, which we see in the big fight scene with Zod. But with the yellow suit, it's diffusing that and that static charge. So he doesn't have to worry about the energy discharge. But anyway, I thought the scene with the babies was genius, except the babies look like crap. Right? I thought he's running through the air. He's got no energy. He has to eat. And you see him going for the babies, and he doesn't grab the baby. He grabs the snack food, and he starts eating the snack food from the machines. And he's using the static electricity to charge a microwave to heat up a burrito and doing things like that. I thought that was amusing. I thought that was a lot of energy. And I love Bruce seeing Affleck as Batman in a blue and gray Batman scene, like the classic, almost like an Adam West version of the scene. But I thought Affleck was great as Batman. Always great to see Jeremy Irons. Wonder Woman makes a great cameo appearance. There's great chemistry between them and Ezra Miller. And I liked everything right up to that point. I think that's when the movie starts to go off the rails a bit with the whole time travel stuff. He just kind of stumbles into time travel. And we have a talk with Bruce Wayne, and Bruce, like Ben Affleck, just looks tired. It's like, I have no energy for this. I you just annoy the hell out of me. Don't screw it all up. And Ezra Miller is not a likable character. He's not a likable Flash. I mean, he's not a likable Barry Allen. But I think the one thing the movie does succeed in doing is transferring your hate for older Barry onto younger Barry. So as soon as you see a younger version of him that's even more annoying, all of a sudden older Barry seems better as the film's going on. I'm like, you know what? I can tolerate this older Barry because he seems to know some responsibility. He seems to understand that there's a problem here. He's still making stupid choices and making jokes at every given situation. But I didn't mind that older Barry thing. And he ends up having to drive the plot. Batman is essentially a cameo in both versions. Michael Keaton is fantastic. I love the scene where he explains how the multiverse works in this case. I don't know how they're like, someone said, how would he know that? And they're like, well, Batman's a scientist. He figures it out. He's obviously read some stuff about quantum physics and stuff. I found the whole idea of different parts of the multiverses coming unhinged and sticking together. That was kind of bizarre, but it works. It's different from the Marvel idea of multiverse, where it's just the doorway to another universe where other things are happening. So the idea that time could mess around with the multiverse like that was interesting enough that we could get this Michael Keaton back from limbo type of thing. One person suggested that all of the different variations of the different DC characters we see all spin out of Barry mucking around with the multiverse. But that sounds like bullshit to me. I think that's just these worlds exist and somehow the streams got crossed and different versions got worked in. I thought the CGI in the time sphere looked really bad. Like CGI generated Henry Cavill and stuff like that. But Andy Muschietti said in interviews that he wanted it to look kind of uncanny valley to make it look unreal, unnatural in the sense that it's unhinged aspects of time. And it was kind of like a painting almost come to life. And I'll be honest, that sounds like bullshit. It just sounds like they just used the CGI in time. I mean, I think that's like maybe they ran out of money to go up and clean it up further. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a better looking version show up on digital in 2 months, you know, something like that. But overall, I mean, I like the arc. Barry grows as a character as the film progresses. So I like him more at the end. I sympathize with his struggle to help his father. Overall, I like this more than the majority of the DC movies that I've seen. So I place it high up there. In fact, I mean, I love the two out of three of the Nolan movies. And I would say this is probably the best DC thing that's come out since those Nolan movies. It doesn't say a lot about the other ones, but I like the premise of this one. I like the direction of it. I like where it ended up. And I'm curious to see where DC will go moving forward.
Aren't we going to Superman next? No, we have something weird coming up next. Blue Beetle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I know nothing about, so we'll find out when I watch it.
And Aquaman 2 as well.
I thought that got pushed to next year.
It'll still come out before Superman.
Oh, okay.
Superman will be 2025.
Oh, God, if I'm alive.
Yeah, and then there'll also be the Creature Commandos TV
show. Is that a cartoon, though, or is that a movie?
It's a cartoon.
I'm in. I love those comics.
It is part of the DCU.
I will watch it. I've watched every DC animated movie.
But, you know, overall, I was entertained by this movie. I know it's got some issues, but I didn't hate Ezra Miller. And even the Supergirl, kind of, I didn't mind either. In fact, I was all ready to hate that character. And for what it was, I thought she was okay. So.
All right. So shall we go see what's lurking in the closet of the boogeyman?
Yeah, not much.
All right. The Boogeyman was directed by Rob Savage, starring Sophie Thatcher, Chris Messina, Vivian Lyra Blair, and David Dutch Smolchin. I could start off on this one.
Wait, Vivian Lyra Blair, the little Princess Leia from...
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, is that who that was?
Mm-hmm. And then the older sister plays the teenage version of Juliette Lewis in Yellow Jackets.
Never seen that.
So I'll start off with this one. I liked this movie. I liked it for what it was. It was a 99-minute, short, sweet, horror film. It wasn't trying to be anything that it wasn't. It had a tight story to tell, and it told it. It starts off with the murder of a baby, and then just goes on from there. I will spoil the fact that that is probably the only murder you see on screen. There's maybe one other, two other deaths. Yeah, three killings in a horror movie total, so it's not a lot. But it is a PG-13, tight little horror story. I like the fact that you don't really see the creature that much. It's always hiding in the dark. I think that does the story well. You do get a glimpse of it at the end, but it's not a very clear view of it. But the creature design was done by the person who did the monster in the Netflix movie The Ritual. I don't know if you remember that from a couple years ago. It was kind of a forgettable horror movie, but the creature design was different and interesting. And so I was excited to see what they did with this movie. All in all, I enjoyed it. I gave it a 3 out of 5. I thought the acting was well. I thought it was good. I do like Sophie Thatcher. She steals every scene she's in Yellow Jackets. So I like seeing her branch out into feature films. I enjoyed it for what it was. It wasn't trying to change the genre in any way. I liked it.
Well, that's nice. I'm glad you have something just to sit back and chill and enjoy. At any point, you could have woke me up from my Vadering beside you. You know, just reached over and said, "Hey, Simon, wake up. The movie's still on." Because I had a complete nap during most of this. This is not my kind of horror. It doesn't have enough blood. It's a little more psychological than I like. And I really just didn't like anybody in the film. Like, this is boring for me. It's just not what I want. I like seeing people dismembered. I like seeing some, I don't know, a little bit more psychological horror. I just thought this was a little basic at times. We all know the creature's not coming until the end. And I just got to the point, I'm like, I don't care. I mean, the parents don't believe it. I don't care. I have no interest in this. I hope they never make a part two. And was there original? I did look up, see if there was another Boogeyman. I couldn't find one. So if this is the first Boogeyman storyline, then I'm good.
Yeah, it's based on a Stephen King
story. Oh, I know. Story. So I knew you would have to watch it. So I put it on just for you.
Oh, yeah.
Because I knew you would want me to watch it. So I might as well just put it on now and get the pain out of my way. What's up with these bad Stephen King short? Have you read the short story?
This one, no, I have not.
Well, I hope it's better than what I just saw, because it's just, it's dull for me.
Stephen King, the short story focuses on the David Dutch Smolchin character.
Okay.
The guy who goes to and it's basically, from what I've heard, it's about his family, how the boogeyman tore his family apart.
Yeah, Boogeyman, just stay here. I don't want to see you again. He needs to go away. Like the Tall Man or whatever the hell, the Shadow Man or
Slender Man?
Slender Man. Oh, terrible. Zach, remind me of that. These are
Candyman.
They just don't do anything for me. They need more action or more something. Or maybe some actual terror would be nice.
Okay.
You knew that was coming.
Yes.
None of this was a surprise to you on my take on Boogeyman. You're just shocked I added to the list, but I might keep him.
Yes.
So I just put it on for Doug. Listen, I could have put League of Gentlemen on, but your nap would have been just as good as mine during that one. Oh, side note, Kevin, I'm talking to Doug, and he goes, "What are you watching?" I go, "I'm watching this movie called League of Gentlemen." He's like, "What?" I'm like, "I accidentally meant to type in 60s films just to see what I hadn't seen. And I accidentally, for some reason, it gave me 1960. Box office said, "You know what? I'm just going to scroll through this and see what I haven't seen." And I was supposed to be watching a movie called The Bell Rings, but I couldn't seem to find it. But then I saw League of Gentlemen, and I actually did read synopsis. I'll be honest, I did read it. Said heist. I said, "I'm in." As soon as it said heist, I was in. I said, "Well, I'm English heist movie. I'm going to try this." Yeah, I can see why it was 10th in the box office. Very forgettable.
Yeah, I don't know this movie at all. Jack Hawkins, Nigel Patrick, Roger
Lawson. That's it. That's the one.
Richard Attenborough. Because I know the League of him in the comedy show.
Yes, with Steve Pemberton and Reese Shearsmith. Yeah, that's a great show.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, don't watch that. It's not. I could see. I can't believe it only got finished 10th. I'd say about 25th. It was so dull.
I did not see Gummy Man, by the way. I didn't. Okay.
We didn't expect you to. We figured you would just pass.
So do you want to fix a hole from last episode, Simon?
Are we going to blood?
I was thinking The Machine, because that's the new release.
The Machine.
Would you like to give your
on The Machine? I have to apologize. Last episode, Kevin, I did have a death in the family, so I kind of missed a few movies. Like two.
I'm sorry to hear you had a death in the family.
I did. So I had to, I kind of read the list wrong and missed a couple movies. So I rectified it. Doug made me watch a movie with
Bert Kreischer.
1 hour and 54 minutes of Bert's life in Russia when he was a student, and he becomes this guy, this crazy party animal called the Machine. So I'm like, okay, well, I know the guy's a stand-up comedian. This will have some jokes in it. Like, I expect it to be jokey and funny. No, it's not funny. There is one good joke. And we'll see if Doug even remembers this joke. So his wife tells him at the beginning, he goes, where's her husband? Oh, they broke up. Don't mention it. Okay. The woman walks by and goes to Bert, where's the food? He goes, where's your husband? That's the only joke I liked in the whole film. And I just like, that's something I would say. The rest of the movie is him running around with Russian mobsters looking for some watch. It is so dumb. I'm like, this is painful.
I told you didn't have to watch it.
Yes, I did, because I missed it. I don't miss movies.
Mark Hamill's in it.
Mark Hamill just sits there going,
yes.
Literally talks like Mark Hamill's Joker voice. So I learned that the Joker is just Mark Hamill. There's no difference between the voices. It's just a little higher pitch Mark Hamill. Nothing happens. It is so bad.
The Joker is really the trickster.
Okay, son. You got to do it. You got to come to the Machine. Rips off his shirt, starts running around. I'm like, oh, God. 1 hour 54 minutes. I said, this was a tight 1.5 hour. It might have had a chance. But when they hyper-extended this, I'm like, this is complete and utter crap. Doug owes me some dime back.
I told you didn't have to watch it.
No, I said and give you a full review of this episode.
And I said the only joke I liked was actually shown in the trailer when he accidentally shoots a person. And he's like, oh, no, I killed somebody. And Mark Hamill, actually, it's multiple people. Yes. Because of his action. That was the one thing that kind of made me chuckle. And that was in the trailer.
It was terrible.
It was.
Thanks, Doug.
You're welcome. But speaking of maybe not terrible things, how about Extraction 2 on Netflix? Directed by Sam Hargrave, starring Chris Hemsworth, and a surprise Idris Elba.
Okay, I'm glad people want a secret. I was listening to another podcast, and this is before the movie came out. And they told me he was the bad guy. So I was all excited. That Idris Elba was like, sweet. I love Idris Elba as a bad guy. Okay, I'm in. So we'll start there. I'll continue, I guess. I'll start this one. I felt everything was like, I was playing like Resident Evil. And all the Russian guys were zombies. And literally, I was sitting there with my gun trying to shoot the zombies as they kept coming for me. And I'm sitting there going, I played this game. It's called Resident Evil, codenamed Veronica. It's exactly the same premise. I have to go rescue somebody. And literally, you do in the movie. You have to go rescue somebody in the game. It takes you a while to get there. But same thing here. You know, people die around you and this and that. And you got to fight a big baddie at the end. I'm like, this is a lot of gunfire, a lot of nonsense, and plays like some. I'm like watching somebody play a video game. And that's really how I felt about this whole film. I thought the big death was telegraphed. I thought everything was really telegraphed ahead of time. I just thought it was watchable at best and not really much more. And Chris Hemsworth is still not right, Chris? I always get confused. Can't act. He continually proves to me he's terrible. Like, you know, I like to see him do something else. I just think this is a big lot of noise. That really didn't mean, I mean, what happened to the Russo brothers? Didn't they write Avengers Endgame? And this is what I get? I'm disappointed.
I don't think they wrote it. I don't think they wrote it. Endgame.
No, they just directed it.
Yeah.
Okay. Disappointing. Not terrible, disappointing.
All right. Well, I'll go next. I liked it. You know, I watched it last night, and I vaguely remember the first Extraction being kind of long and drawn out.
It was. And, I liked it better, though.
And he was basically dead at the end, so I don't know how he could be alive to be the star of this movie.
They showed you that in the beginning.
I know. In the hospital, and he can take out an army of people again.
Yeah. No, just takes his not yet. Shovel. He had to spend at least 5 minutes working out in those rocks.
Right, and he had to snow. He had to shovel snow.
Yes, he had to shovel snow.
And he had to spend time with chickens.
Yes.
I thought that entire sequence when he goes into the prison and to the point where their train crashes is the most riveting action sequence I've seen in a long time. I love it. I'm following along. It's like almost like a continuous shot. It cuts along and there's lots of action. I don't know how any of them are still alive through that whole thing, but I was thoroughly entertained. I think, and at that point I said, wow, I'm only 47 minutes into this and I'm loving this. This is like watching the cutscenes from a video game with all the most exciting parts on screen. So I enjoyed it a lot. And the second part I thought was actually pretty decent too. It's like every other action thing where there's an evil bad guy that just won't be, he's relentless and, you know, he's got a grudge against him for a personal reason and blah, 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 blah. It was like every other action movie. But I liked it. I thought, man, I wish Thor 4 was like this. I would have liked Love and Thunder if it was this good. Action packed and whatever else, But for a time waster on Netflix, I thought it was great. Top-notch action.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually agree with Kevin. I think this is a much better movie than the first one. I thought the first one was really forgettable, and like Kevin said, he dies.
The first one.
I was watching this one. My son comes into the room and goes, what are you watching? I said, oh, it's Extraction 2. He goes, didn't he die in the first one? Like, yeah, but they brought him back.
He got better.
Exactly. But this movie's essentially, what, three big set pieces of action? And the first one is the 21-minute fake long take. I mean, it's easy to find the edit points if you're looking for them. But it was impressive to watch. The second one, I hate heights. So the fight on that, I guess, like balcony ceiling, the balcony roof, that terrified me because I don't like heights and having him hold on to the side. That was impressive to me.
Ridiculous is what that was. Nobody can do that. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah.
I'd like to see somebody actually do that in real life.
Well, do you go to these movies looking for, like, realism or escapism?
I don't think I do, but to a point I'm like, dude, I lift weights. There's no way that's possible.
I'm not saying it's possible. I'm saying it's thrilling to watch.
I just did like that scene. The scene you're discussing.
Just like the Mission Impossible movies.
That scene was good. I really did like that scene. With the glass breaking, I thought that was pretty awesome. I will give that one full credit.
Yeah, I mean, when I first saw Chris Hemsworth in the first Thor movie, I thought he was a horrible actor. I thought he couldn't hold his own on screen. I'm in the camp that the first Thor is maybe the worst Marvel film. I really do not like that movie at all. But he's grown on me. He's starting with his comedic roles in Ghostbusters, Cabin in the Woods. There was one other, the Thor Ragnarok. he started to really come into his own as an actor, and I think in this movie he shows he can be the lead of an action film. For me, he was forgettable in the first one. This one, he had the physical presence to, you know, lead the team that he had, and I thought he was actually very good in this movie. Not Oscar worthy, but definitely up there with somebody like Stallone or Van Damme. I would watch an action movie starring Chris Hemsworth because of this. Let's see, what did I give this? I gave it 3 out of 5 for my Letterboxd score.
I think I'm drawing now, I haven't given one yet, though, but I could. Here, let me do that now for you.
Okay.
Continue. I'm just going to
let it. And now we could go draw some blood.
Oh.
Yes, now we'll draw some blood. Directed by Brad Anderson, starring Michelle Monaghan and Skeet Ulrich. This was another one that Simon missed last episode.
Okay, rub it in.
I would have told him. I would have told you to skip this one too. I will be honest, I did not care for this movie. I like Brad Anderson as a director. I think he's done very good horror movies in the past. I think Session 9 is an all-time great unknown horror movie. I don't know a lot of people who know it, but I think it's well worth watching if you're into psychological horror films. The Machinist with Christian Bale, I think, was a very good movie as well. Then he went on to do a bunch of TV, and so when he's back directing a feature film about a vampire, I got excited. Unfortunately, there's not much to get excited about. It's a simple story with really nothing new to offer. The only thing I liked about the movie, really, was the image of – I guess I'll spoil this. The image of the dead son in the mud at the end after he was drowned, and you just see the hand sticking up, and it was a pretty gruesome image. But that's about it. I can't believe that the mother got away with doing that and that there wasn't a bigger investigation into it, especially considering there was already an investigation where the ex-husband thought she was using drugs again. Yeah, there's really nothing to recommend about this movie. I gave it a 1 out of 5.
Oh, wow. I like something better than you.
Yeah.
I really apparently thought this movie was too slow for what it was. I really think they didn't go into the origins of anything. I was kind of like, okay. So we're just literally going to watch Michelle Monaghan try to get blood for her kid and watch her kid get more and more bloodthirsty as he goes. I get that. I thought the old woman storyline might go somewhere. Like, when the cops show up, they kind of just brush that off. I was like, oh, okay, well, where are we going with this? And then really nothing happens. Mm-hmm. It just sort of kind of ends. I'm like, okay. So while you're telling me with your storyline, this could have been wrapped up in 25 minutes. Because there was no need for this thing to go on as long as it did. I just kept hoping something more would happen, but nothing. All the only problem is she has more problems than problems getting blood for him. That's it. Nothing's ever explained. I mean, this and that, and then the dad gets mad at the end till the kid dies, and that's really about it, and they all go on. I was kind of like, couldn't she just say he was homeschooling the kid? Like, wouldn't that have solved one of the problems pretty easily?
Maybe.
So, yes, I rectified the situation from last time. I did not. I like blood. I'd probably give it a 2. I wouldn't want it.
Wow. Okay. I originally had 2, but then the more I thought about it, the more I sat with it, the less I liked it. So it went down from a 2 to a 1.
No, 1 to me is going to be something I just absolutely hate.
Okay.
And that's it for me. Blood. Okay, so I'm booking them all now because I don't know if you read my thing or not, so I refuse to do them.
I don't. I actually don't read your Letterboxd because I want to be surprised by your takes.
I do. I have you on Letterboxd, but I don't read your Letterboxd.
Okay.
I do try not to.
Well, now I get to now I can find out what you think about Godzilla versus King Ghidorah.
Oh, Kevin loves it.
Directed by...
When I was a kid. Let's get little Kev on.
All right. Directed by Kazuki Amori, starring Kazuki Toyohara and a bunch of other people. Do you want to go first, Simon, or would you like me to give my...
Since I'm the Godzilla fan, I guess I have to go first, don't I?
Okay.
I don't know how to describe watching this, because I think it's just a big mess. Literally, I'm like, where are you going? You have this great premise. Okay, I let it go, this and that. Then the aliens show up. I'm like, oh, okay, they want us to do this. Then we realize the aliens are actually bad and this and that. And I'm like, where the fuck's Godzilla? Where is Godzilla? I'm watching this for Godzilla. Not watch this bad animated guy running around with this weird arm thing. Where is Godzilla? This film makes literally no sense at times. There's no plot because they literally just repeat the plot every 20 minutes, I found. We're going to have this plot for the first part. Then we're going to have a second plot that just takes away from the first plot, but it's kind of like the first plot. Then the third plot is really the first plot over again. And I found it was just, that was it. It was like 30 minute shorts of the same thing. And I'm like, and then King Ghidorah shows up. I'm like, oh, at least we're going to get some action. But no, he's the King Ghidorah for the first one. I'm like, this is confusing, guys. Like, I think, and then I read the wiki. I said, okay, I got to read what the hell the plan for this film was because I was so confused. They thought Back to the Future did so well and Godzilla versus Bayanta bombed. So they thought they needed time travel to make the film better. Mm-hmm. Did they watch Back to the Future?
Apparently they know Steven Spielberg produced it. No, Spielberg produced it because there was a lot of Spielberg references in this.
There is, but none of them make sense. No. I'm like, why is Arnie a bad android? I'm like, there's Arnie as a Terminator running around. This was garbage, complete and utter garbage. And I've never seen this one. This one, I will say, I've never seen.
Okay. I had seen it before, and I was like, oh, wait, this is the one that has Major Spielberg in it, who sees an alien, and the guy tells him, oh, you could tell your son about this, Major Spielberg. And he's like, I will, sir. Yeah, there's time travel. There's dinosaurs for some, like they say Godzilla was a dinosaur.
Yes.
Who got mutated.
During World War II.
Yes.
I watched these Godzilla movies for the 50s.
Yes.
And American
See, I watched these movies.
Because American soldiers die in it. I read that.
Oh, really?
Yes, I read that too.
Okay. Later.
I told you, deep drive
well, a lot of the snow. A lot of Japanese people die as well, but, you know.
I wonder what little Kevin would have thought of this film.
I would tell my dad, or no, I don't know what I'd tell my son, Major Boyd, instant Corporal Boyd. I have no idea. I don't think I've seen this one. This is an 80s one?
Yes.
90s.
Yeah. 90s. I didn't revisit any of those when they, I think I saw the first one. But yeah, it's
our Godzilla marathon that we do every couple of shows. We're halfway done now.
Fuji used to make me watch these movies.
And I love these movies.
Tell you.
Love them.
Yeah.
Big pile of crap. Love it. Keep going. Bring another one on. Who's Godzilla going to fight next?
I think Mothra. I think the next one's Mothra.
At least Mothra. Oh,
I could be wrong.
I love Mothra because that means I get my two little fairies back.
All right. Are you ready to discuss The Spirit of St. Louis?
Yes.
Directed by Billy Wilder, starring Jimmy Stewart.
I say.
Have you seen this one, Kev?
No, I haven't. I may have seen it, but I don't remember it.
Okay. I could start off. I honestly don't know why this movie was made. I will be perfect. I would understand if they made this movie maybe 20 years earlier. It's about the flight from New York to Paris that Charles Lindbergh made in 1927. I understand that was a big moment in aviation history. He's a big American hero at the time. However, in between 1927 and 1957, when this movie came out, a little thing called World War II happened. In World War II, everybody knows the Nazis were the bad guys.
Yeah.
Charles Lindbergh was a very famous Nazi sympathizer. I don't know how they made a movie about an American hero who was a Nazi sympathizer. I think that is incredibly stupid. Lindbergh himself did not like this movie. He blamed it on the casting of Jimmy Stewart, because Jimmy Stewart was 47 at the time and he was supposed to be playing a 25-year-old.
Oh, wow.
So that's bad in itself. But I think – and this movie apparently bombed at the box office. Lindbergh thought it was because of the casting. I think it's because Americans don't want to support a movie about a guy who liked Nazis. I think it's as simple as that to me. Nazis are bad guys. Why would we want to celebrate one? Now, maybe that's hypocritical of me. I understand that NASA, the incredible success of NASA is because of a lot of the Nazi scientists that were brought over to America at the time to help in the space race. But we're not making movies about them. That's fair. Yeah, that is fair. That's a fair point. Yeah. Fair point, Kevin. It was well made because it's Billy Wilder. He doesn't make bad movies per se. I just don't think this movie should have been made. It's 2 hours, 15 minutes long. It's way too long. And I just don't know why I should care about Charles Lindbergh.
Okay. We should care about Charles Lindbergh. Only one sense. He's the first man to do what he did. And he did help aviation in that way to prove it could be done. That was a good thing. I just think this movie spends too long getting to where we need to go. Like, we're sitting there and I'm like, let's go. Let's get this plane built. And they kept showing everybody else's issues. Okay, let's go. Like him going to the beginning, trying to get the plane going. And we didn't need that opening. And then those flashback scenes of him learning to fly. I don't care. Absolutely, I need it. Time filler, that 50 minutes of him flying, like, we don't care. You know what I mean? Like, we don't need the flashback. It's absolutely useless, I found, in this film. Jimmy Stewart's Jimmy Stewart. Why is he in the film? Of course, because Jimmy Stewart, people are going to go pay money to see him. You know, sorry, Lindbergh, that's why you're Jimmy Stewart. Sorry, I get that. And what also bugged me is they did the flying scene. If you look up, of course, I Wikipedia this too, Charles Lindbergh, that he doesn't really talk to anybody on the flight. Like, he did fly low and stuff. But you see the cloud shots? I'm like, this plane ain't moving. He ain't going anywhere. It's the same cloud going by over and over and over again. And I kind of thought there might be something at the end to give us a little credit on him. Really nothing of interest. Mm-hmm. You know, I think this movie is just bland.
Did you want them to get into the kidnapping of his kid?
I thought there might have been something on that, because that's what I was looking for. Okay. I did read about that. I went in depth about that too, but that's a different story for a different show.
Yeah, that is way different.
I just felt this needed more depth or cut some out. Like at 1:45, I think I would have been happy. But we're hitting the I'm like, I don't care anymore, guys. Let's wrap this up. Like even the scene when he's trying to get financing, smoking the cigar, I thought was pointless.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't smoke cigar. Then why do we have this scene? Like, did that really happen?
Maybe they were trying to rehabilitate Lindbergh's image at the time.
But I think they did that when he went to San Diego and he goes, oh, I'm that bigwig from St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
I think they rehabilitated him perfectly there. Because he seemed like a real guy back then, working with the other guys building the plane. That rehabilitated him.
Isn't Lindbergh the statue that the Rocketeer straps the rocket pack onto at the beginning of the movie? And it loses its head?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And our final film of the episode is 1942's To Be or Not to Be, directed by Ernst Lubitsch, starring Carol Lombard and Jack Benny.
Before we start this, I'm going to tell you why I had to watch this.
Okay.
A friend of mine who puts movie like just lists up all the time, and it was like 30 films you need to see. I should have saved it. That you had to see if you're a true film fan. And he put on the bottom, "Okay, guys, you had to see at least 25. I'd seen 29 out of 30 on the list. And this was the one film on the list I had never seen. So, of course, me being me, I wicked it and said Carol Lombard. I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen a Carol Lombard film. So I said, you know what? This is the last one. Let's put a Carol Lombard film. So that's why this came on the list. So I got to say, I love this film. Oh, my God, what a delightful surprise of a film. I couldn't really figure out where it was going in the beginning. I honestly will say I had no idea. I thought it was going to be a Hitler spoof, but it kind of is, kind of isn't. And then when the Robert Stack character showed up, I'm like, oh, it's going to be a love affair film. Nope, it's not that either. And then it goes into like this World War II drama. I'm like, where the hell is this going? I am fascinated by this. And then it gets the spy stuff going on, and then it comes wraps it all up, bringing it back to the beginning. You know what? Awesome. Absolutely love this film. Carol Lombard and Jack Benny amaze me how strong they are in this film. And so is Robert Stack. The three main leads are great. And at one point, they had me convinced that Jack Benny was playing the professor and Jack Benny at the same time. But he wasn't. He wasn't the professor. I thought he was. I'm like, when he came out later, I'm like, you guys got me convinced. I don't know if it's Jack Benny or not. And it wasn't. But I was impressed. I'm like, every time I thought it was going to go somewhere, it went somewhere different. And it was great. It kept me guessing. I had no clue how this was going to end. And I wrapped up exactly where it started. And I thought that was perfect. I will say I absolutely would give this film a solid 8 out of 10. I just think it's a must watch comedy. Like this is doesn't even do anything crazy, but it's very tight. They have good acting. The dialogue's great and everything they do leads something and wraps up later. And I hate to bring this back, which I don't know if we're going to do No Hard Feelings on the show, but I'm watching a Jennifer Lawrence No Hard Feelings. I saw that recently. And I'm like, the problem with this film is it doesn't go anywhere. It literally has its premise and stalls. And I find that's the problem with comedies now. That a lot of them just stall. We didn't get that Hangover because it continued the jokes. And I find they have a good premise and they start the jokes and then they just sort of stall. And then they have to rectify it by the end. And I mean, this film doesn't stop. It keeps introducing new things constantly as the film's going. And wraps up beautifully at the end and still introduces new things at the end. I mean, what more could I ask for? Perfect film. You know what? Screw this. I'll give it a 10. Screw my 8. I'm giving it a 10 now. I think this is just wonderful.
All right. Kevin, have you seen this?
I have not seen it.
Okay. I am much more familiar with the Mel Brooks remake of this movie.
What's that?
It To Be or Not to Be.
It's exactly
starring Mel Brooks and exactly.
Yeah, I've seen the Mel Brooks one, but I haven't.
Starring Mel Brooks and his wife Anne Bancroft as the Turins. So I saw this way back, like maybe 30 years ago, when I found out that the Mel Brooks movie was a remake. So I watched the original, and the stories are pretty much identical. The Mel Brooks version has a couple musical numbers that are part of the show that the troupe is putting on. And I always think that it's part of the producers because it's a Hitler musical. It's like, you know, he comes in, you know, all I want is some peace. and it breaks into a song about, I'll take a little piece of Poland, a little piece of France. Yeah. So I always get that confused with the producers. But yeah, I love this movie. I think Jack Benny, I think he was astonishing in this film. I'm not sure how many films he's done. I know he's mostly known as a stand-up comic. But he was wonderful in this. And Carol Lombard's story is really sad. She was married to Clark Gable. She thought he was having an affair, and she was on a USO tour. So she wanted to get back to California as soon as she can. There was no flights. So she begged the Army, like, you know, do you have a flight? Can I get back to California? Unfortunately, there was a plane crash and everybody on board died. That happened during post-production on this movie. They actually had to remove a line from the film that Carol Lombard said, what could go wrong on a plane? So that was cut from the film because of what happened to her. But she was wonderful in this. I think everybody was fantastic. I thought it was really funny. I thought that some of the scenes where Carol Lombard is getting interrogated by the Nazis, they got pretty tense. Yes. And this movie has everything. It's tense. It's funny. It has some romance in it. And then to end on to be or not to be, and the look between Jack Benny and Robert Stack as the other guy gets up and walks.
So good.
It's amazing. I'm with you, Simon. I cannot recommend this enough. And on top of that, I will also recommend the Mel Brooks remake, which I would go as far as to say I like better than the original.
So it's going to get a 10 then.
Yeah.
Okay. I would have put it on the list had I known there was a remake. I did not. So hence it's not in the list.
Okay.
So Kevin, you did see this or haven't seen this? You haven't.
I've seen the Mel Brooks remake. And
did you like it?
I do like it. It's been a while though.
Okay.
And I often do mix it up with producers because of Springtime for Hitler and the musical numbers in this.
So I presume Mel Brooks plays the Jack Benny part.
Yes.
And who plays Carol Lombard?
Anne Bancroft.
Oh, okay. Then Anne Bancroft is wonderful. So that's fine. Okay. Kevin, since you've been on the show in like, I don't know, 6 months, have you bought anything?
Oddly enough, yes, I have bought a
couple. What a surprise!
Not a lot of things, my dude. I bought three movies.
Get my stuff. I'll be right back.
Okay. I bought Shazam 2, The Fury of the Gods.
Piece of junk!
So just so I could see it. I bought Marlowe, starring Liam Neeson, Diane Kruger, Jessica Lange, directed by Neil Jordan. I don't know if you've reviewed that one or not.
We have not. Was it any good?
I liked it. It went direct to video or direct to streaming and went from $30 to $20 to $15.
Sorry, what movie was this?
Marlowe.
I saw it. Don't say we haven't seen it.
We haven't reviewed it.
We have not. I have seen it though.
Okay. And then I got Dungeons and Dragons.
Here we go again.
That's one I really liked. Simon did not.
Simon had issues.
I'm going with you on this one, Doug. I didn't know what to expect, and I thought it was charming. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Of course you did. I like Shazam 2, too.
Shazam 2 was... No, not very good. The only thing I thought amusing about Shazam 2 was... And I don't know how many years it's been since Mr. Mind went to go see whatever the evil professor's name is. He sees him in jail at the end of the first movie. He says, yes, we're going to conquer humanity and take them. And then he goes off and he comes back and says, well, it's been a year. And he's like, so what are we going to do? And he's like, I'm still working on it.
And then he goes away and he's like, oh,
that's the whole movie to me. And it's like, it's been a whole year and this is what you came up with, this piece of shit movie. But it's nice to see Wonder Woman.
It was nice, even though she wasn't there. Neither was his director.
I will show what I got. This is actually one I promised to put on my next list because I'm so curious about it. It's called, where, damn it, camera.
Well, no, that's your fault.
There we go.
People at home that may, if I ever put up videos, Doug's got his screen all blocked out so you can't see behind him. So he's trying to hold up.
I'll unblur. It's called Cold Turkey. It's the only movie written and directed by Norman Lear, who is a luminary among television shows. So I'm very curious about this movie. So that will definitely be on my next list. I also got a couple of other things, some old movies, Ghost Breakers, starring Bob Hope.
I don't know who Paulette Goddard is.
Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains, which is a really fun movie. Stars Diane Lane in her first starring role.
Diane Lane, I'm in.
And then the last one I got, New Criterion, The Servant, it's called. There we go.
Oh, for four. Doug just likes
all right.
So, like last time, I forgot last time on the show to bring my movies, probably because my brain was elsewhere. So, this was the worst garage sale massive I've ever been to. Like, absolutely nothing but one church. I found four DVDs. That was it. That's all I found so far this year is four. I haven't been out much, though. And then Saturday, yesterday, because we record Sundays, people know, that I did try to go out, and I got to the garage sale at 1, and it was already packed up. So, oh, well, and they said they had DVDs. So this is all I found. Loch Ness, The Ten Heads, Joy Richardson, which I've never seen. I don't think I've ever seen The Right with Anthony Hopkins, but it's still sealed, so that's probably a positive. And did we ever review Take Me Home Tonight, Kevin? I couldn't remember if we ever reviewed this. We probably would have. Anna Faris and Topher Grace. No, I don't think we ever did this because I don't think I've ever heard of it. So I think I was direct to video. And this made me happy. I found this movie called Positive ID. And I have starring people I've never heard of. So I always get excited when I find something I've never, ever heard of. And, you know, Positive ID, I'm sure this will be a blockbuster of a movie. So
I found a movie that we have to watch that I know we've never reviewed.
What?
And premises, and I don't know if we can even find a copy of it. It's called Tiptoes.
Tiptoes?
Is that with Gary Oldman?
Gary Oldman, Peter Dinklage, Kate Beckinsale, Matthew McConaughey. Basically, Matthew McConaughey, his family is all dwarves.
What the fuck?
A family of dwarves, and so it's just a very bizarre movie, like where all of these normal sized actors play dwarves, and then Peter Dinklage is in there too.
Okay, we'll do this after show. Can we wrap up and then get to this? I promise.
Beckinsale, Patrick, Katz, Ed Gale, David Alan Greer. It's got all his cast in it. Anyway,
okay, if we're done now, I can actually wrap up.
Yes, sorry.
If they make it, Simon will watch it and review it on the next episode. Goodbye.
If he doesn't.
Yes. Good night.
Good night.